Please, Jay, tell in what schools have you studied?
I was an undergraduate at Harvard, and there I was particularly interested in algebraic topology and algebraic geometry. I was took a lot of courses with Bach. He was the star teacher in those days. Probably still is now.
What's the name?
Bach.
Oh, yes,
Bach.
Yes. Rao.
Yes. I was very interested in those areas.
I had some exchange of letters with him in 50s when I was interested in... he has done at this time some work about topology of Lie groups and manifolds.
Yes, yeah. That's what he was working on. K-theory was essentially evolved from his work on Lie groups.
Mm-hmm.
Is the periodicity theorem, mm-hmm. the original
yes,
group.
Yes.
And then when I went to Princeton for my graduate work, I decided I wanted to have a complete switch of fields. And I looked around for what seemed interesting, and for some reason, I'm not quite sure why, I decided to... I guess Barry Simon was new at Princeton, fairly new, and he has a lot of energy. And I decided to try to work with him. I was his first graduate student. And at the time, quantum field theory was... constructive quantum field theory, that is. It was just coming into its own. Whiteman, of course, was there also, and Nelson. And it was a very exciting time, although I was somewhat on the margins, being just a student. But I would hear the stories about how they were able to greatly simplify the Glim and Jaffe proofs that would take many, many pages of horrible details they were able to do in a page or two. It was great simplifications, and it was very exciting then.
Okay.
So after that, I went, after I got my doctorate there, I went to Rockefeller. I was, Lim was then at Rockefeller. It's the days before the mathematics disbanded there. And I was a postdoc there for 2 years.
So tell about a little bit more about people at Princeton. Who were also students or maybe later of Barry Simon? Do we know some of them?
When I was there, the people... He's had a lot of good students since then, but when...
Who are the most well-known among them?
Well, Percy Dyfed was a student of his. He's at Courant. There's someone at... John Hopkins.
No, it's not necessary, of course, to give the full list.
And now, of course, he's at Caltech.
Yes, of course. I had contacts by mail, of course, with Nelson beginning, I think, early 50s maybe, or... anyway, he has sent me his PhD thesis, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Whose student was he, do you know? Nelson. No, this is, of course, an ancient history for you.
I don't remember. Is it Phillips or something like that?
Who? No, it's not.
I don't remember.
Bochner might be, because of flavor of his first work, but not necessarily. And Barry Simon was Nelson's? Or whose?
No, he was Whiteman's.
Whiteman?
Yeah, yes. And I also had a 1 year Barry went away on leave, so I was... Nelson took me over.
Uh-huh.
And he suggested several problems which didn't pan out. Most of them were workable. And just the results turned out to be uninteresting.
Uh-huh.
And so I wrote a letter towards the end of the year to Barry Simon. I was looking forward to coming back, maybe have some interesting ideas. And he had just been at a conference where Lenny Gross had... discussed his logarithmic Sobol inequalities.
Yes.
So
you become involved in that.
Well, yeah. Why don't you generalize that to non-Gaussian, non-free field, non-Gaussian semigroups? And so I did. That was my.
I don't understand quite well the history of all this movement. What was the beginning of this Euclidean theory? Nelson, Szymanczyk, Glim Jaffe, chronologically.
Well, I believe Szymanczyk was...
Weidman?
I believe that, well, there are different threads here. Weidman, in a paper with Garding, I don't remember the exact date. You can find all this in his book with Streeter, the PCT spin and statistics and all that.
No, but
that's a readable book.
Okay.
Have you familiar with that?
I looked at it once several many years ago.
It's a readable book because anyway, Weidman was I think played a very important role in a lot of people's work. He was a real physicist who was very mathematical and wanted to do things rigorously. And he developed the axioms to try to see what can be said. We had no examples of real quantum fields, but what would be reasonable requirements for them, and to try to study the implications. And I don't remember the exact date of when he did, whether it was in the late 50s or early 60s.
He published in the 60s.
With Garding, was that in the 60s, not in the 50s? Anyway, that spurred a lot of activity. Axiomatic quantum field theory is called, just assuming those axioms, or perhaps a little more, what can one say? And it was amazing, one could say a lot of very general things about what would have properties of the Weidman, all sorts of analyticity, and etc., etc. And then there was the idea, let's find some real fields. And the realistic fields were very complicated. And the very simplest case would be to consider a boson field, one single boson field, without fermions. And the simplest non-trivial case would be the phi-4 interaction, because a phi-square, you can't take an odd polynomial, because it would be unbounded below. And phi, and two
yes.
degrees is a mass, so this was the natural thing to do. And the original work, of course, Glim and Jaffe did, were the pioneers in this.
Have they this time transformation changed to imaginary?
No. That comes in late. They did things really in Minkowski space where the fields were operator value distributions,
mm-hmm.
as they should be. And put things in a box. I still must have these old lecture notes of Jaffe, and you prove all sorts of his value. It was really very hard to prove all sorts, and this is just in two dimensions, proving all sorts of bounds and lower bounds and upper bounds, and, things on the energy in a box. And in three dimensions was really awful. Because in three dimensions you have a mass renormalization. It's not just subtracting off a constant from the energy. It was just a terrible. These papers were unbelievable. And then, Szymanczyk had proposed Euclidean field theory. He was, I guess, what you call a theoretical physicist, or perhaps what used to be a mathematical physicist, but not a rigorous, not someone who did rigorous mathematics. And I believe he was the first to show that in his paper, Euclidean quantum field theory, which to talk about analytically continuing and showing how various properties of the fields, that they would be, if you continue to imaginary time it, that they would be symmetric. And he was able to derive on a very formal level. He didn't really talk in terms of a measure on S prime or anything like that, But are you able to derive in very formal terms properties of the Schrödinger functions, first of all? And secondly, a form of what they, a very formal expression for what they should be in terms of just what the Schrödinger function should be for 5-4. And there were two parts to this. One part was simply a form which showed you that they were positive. For positive functions, they were positive. And apparently that's what, you know, Munasin saw that. Apparently that's what led him to this measuring here. And so from that sense, that relatively minor point was the most seminal point as far as constructive field theory was concerned. Because Nelson is a measure, and he, I don't know exactly how he thought it out, but he...
Without this, definitely we would not be interested right. in this subject at all.
That's right. Right. We would never have got into it. So he developed Markov fields. Besides, I should say, besides in his paper that on constructive quantum fields and Markov fields, I don't know if I should record this, but I believe that there was an important error that couldn't be fixed.
Oh, Nelson's paper?